Is it Beatrice?
I know Dean's number.
It's in 172.
Please identify yourself.
You can ask whoever it is.
Well, you know, there are people who are coming in.
This is CM. I can't hear anything, just a minute.
Thanks for the sign, picture of the sign, CM.
Great photo. Yeah. Great photo.
So happy about that.
What's the weather like back there?
I mean, I've barely been outside, but today it was raining this afternoon, so I was happy about that, but I only was outside for 2 minutes.
I hear
minutes.
The heat wave is we're coming your way. Yeah,
yeah, it's supposed to be 90-something tomorrow. We're kind of nonstop. It's good. It's a good nonstop, but it's really no
okay.
Playtime.
We have a quorum, and we are ready. Call to order the City of Newport work session on July 18th, 2022. Roll call, please.
Bateo?
Here.
Goble?
Here.
Hall?
Here.
Kaplan?
Here.
Jacoby?
Here.
And Parker?
Present.
Okay. City Manager's report, please.
Well, tonight we have several things to go through, and the first is going to be a presentation on the progress that we've made with our GIS system, and we'll be hearing from Richard and Carl here shortly. The second item is talking about pavement management, and Dave and Justin will be sharing that information with you. The third item is, get to the right part here. Third item is a report on the efforts to recruit a diverse employment base, and then the last thing is developing the legislative priorities for the 2023 legislative session. We have an executive session at the end of the meeting we plan to spend 20 minutes on each of these sections. So we'll have to be timely to get through and have some time before the regular meeting. So at this point, we'll start with Richard, and if you want to proceed with the presentation on progress that's been made on GIS.
Sure, yeah. Let's dive straight in here. So I'm not sure whether or not you've all had opportunity. I think some of you met Carl before, but Carl's been with us for 3 months now, 3 or 4 months,
yeah.
Something like that, and has made an awful lot of progress for us in the GIS department. So we've been rather lacking in this area for a little while. We had a technician for a while, and then they were gone, and we've been fallow. So we're very, very fortunate to be up and running and in such great hands as well. So I'm not going to wobble on any more than that, because Carl's got a short presentation to you, show you what we've been up to in the GIS realm across all of the city departments, really. So over to you, Carl.
All right. Well, thank you, Richard, for that introduction, and thank you, Council, for giving me the opportunity to share with you some things going on in GIS here at the city. So, first of all, what is GIS anyway?
There's something wrong with the speakers there, Bill. Grainy.
No.
Yeah, maybe speak.
Is that any better?
Mm-hmm.
It is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There. Sometimes you got to speak right into it. So.
A little okay. Closer.
Perfect.
Yeah, thank you.
So a GIS or geographic information system is a system that manages, creates, analyzes, and maps all types of data. It helps people reach a common goal to gain actionable intelligence. In GIS, there are essentially two different types of data. Vector and raster. Vector are composed of points, lines, and polygons like you'd see on a map. An example of a point could be a water hydrant, an example of a line could be a street, and an example of a polygon could be a building. Raster is often associated with satellite or aerial imagery, and they are composed of pixels. In this presentation, we'll be mainly focused on vector data, And every vector feature, a point, a line, or a polygon can store multiple categories of information, known as attributes. Using water hydrants here as an example, we can see that there are attributes for color, condition, and brand. Using location and attribute information together, GIS can be used to examine the statistical and spatial distribution of data to identify relationships and patterns. Here, using Portland, Oregon's heritage tree data which has been made public, I generated a count of the most common genus, the statistical distribution of the trunk diameter, and then made a comparison of the relationship between trunk diameter and height, which we can see here is logically a positive correlation. GIS can also be used to communicate information to the public. An example of this is the 2022 Transportation System Plan web map, which is available through the City of Newport website. Using GIS, we can allow members of the public to interact with the data directly through web maps and tools to understand how proposed changes will affect their area. Here we can compare multimodal and vehicle projects. We can also view more detailed data sets as we zoom in on the map. Another example of this is the zoning lookup application I'm currently developing. This tool allows users to search by address to interact with zoning data and determine what uses are permitted at that location. So if we use our current location here, we can see that we're zoned for public structures. Makes sense. You can also interact with this map by simply clicking and pointing on different areas. And again, we can see conditional, permitted, and prohibited uses. But in addition to providing information to the public, GIS can be used as a tool for city staff. Here we see the city's MoMap, which includes data identifying which department or agency is responsible for lawn maintenance. Again, more detailed data can be viewed at different scales. City staff can access this interactive map using ArcGIS field maps on a mobile device to pan, zoom, and toggle layers. ArcGIS field maps also pairs with other navigation apps such as Google Maps or Apple Maps. This allows any user to select a feature on the MoMap and easily navigate to it directly from their location. During my time here at the City of Newport, I've been proud to partner with other organizations such as Lincoln County, Oregon Department of Transportation, Oregon Office of Emergency Management, Willamette Valley Communications Center, Oregon Department of Geology and Mineral Industries, and Lincoln City. By partnering with these organizations, we gain access to a wealth of data that we would be unable to create on our own. So utilizing this data shared with us, GIS plays an important role in emergency management. The data seen in this web map has been shared with the city by the Oregon Office of Emergency Management, Oregon Department of Transportation, National Interagency Fire Center, NASA, and others. Several data sets you see on this map include real-time data, such as wildfire perimeters, traffic, and smoke forecast. But in disaster response, there's also a lot of value in well-maintained print maps, which don't require a battery charge or internet connection. The data you see in this mapbook page was provided by the Willamette Valley Communications Center and Lincoln County for aerial imagery and vector data, such as street center lines. These mapbooks created for the Newport Fire Department allow firefighters to respond to emergencies across Lincoln County with accurate location information. But in addition to general reference maps, GIS can be used to prepare for specific disaster scenarios. These maps were created using data shared by the Oregon Department of Geology and Mineral Industries for tsunami evacuation zones. This map was also created using data shared by Dogami, which assesses landslide susceptibility. These maps and data sets play an important role in preparing for and responding to a Cascadia subduction zone event. However, one of the greatest applications of GIS here at the city is in the Public Works Asset Management Department. Leveraging data stored in the cloud through ArcGIS Online, Public Works staff in the field can access the same data as engineers in the office. Again, we can view more data sets as we zoom in. Using ArcGIS field maps, Public Works staff can relay information to all city staff through GIS in real time. When edits to data are done in the field, those same edits become immediately visible to staff at City Hall. Moving forward, one of the main priorities for GIS here at the city will be updating the city's internally created data to validate each feature's location and attribute information. Mainly, this is because the strength of any GIS comes down to accurate data. This process involves calibrating a GPS receiver. The GPS receiver that has been purchased by the engineering department is capable of accuracy down to the centimeter. We will then need to clean the data and prepare the attribute design to allow for drop-down menus to be used in the field. Then we'll test our GPS receiver for accuracy to determine our confidence in our data. Then the actual data collection itself, going out into the field to add, remove, and correct feature locations and attribute information, and then repeating the process for all data sets which require updates. So this could involve potentially updating thousands of features such as fire hydrants or manholes in the field and assessing 4, 5, or 6 attributes per feature. To give you a little peek into the process, this is a dashboard I created for our manhole data update process. What you see in the web map on my left here is manhole points. These green dots are data points which require an update. And I've also set this dashboard up to record statistics on our GPS receiver accuracy to ensure that we have high quality data. With high quality data, there's really no limit to the interesting ways that we can interact with and present our data. One way that we can do this is using a ArcGIS scene. Here we can see a 3D model of the city of Newport, which can be zoomed and panned interactively. And just as an example, I added our fire hydrants data to this web scene. So that concludes my prepared material. I'd like to thank you all again for giving me the opportunity to speak, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Wow.
Stunned silence.
I have some questions.
Sure.
Has the police department used GIS to deal with nuisance abatement? That seems like a good thing to start tracking data on, is call location by residents, and to use that internally to work towards resolution of some nuisance properties and blight and stuff like that. That seems like a really good use of your time to work with Jason and his department on those sorts of things.
Yeah, absolutely. That data does not currently exist in GIS, but using address data, that could be easily brought in.
Yeah, I think they may have some information, but it's not currently within the city's GIS system. I think there's some out third-party stuff for that, but I could be speaking out of turn here. I'd have to check with Jason on that. But you're absolutely right. There's really no limit to this. So one of the things that we've been doing over the last couple few months since we've kind of really gotten going on this is having regular cross-department meetings. So if you had representatives from, you know, department heads from Parks and Rec, Public Works, Engineering, Fire, Police, Planning, and so forth. So we're really trying to make sure that staff across the entire spectrum are aware of all of the sorts of projects which are going on in other areas besides necessarily their own, so we can have some cross-pollination of ideas. But that's certainly a really good example of a great application.
It seems like having data on outcomes of the CSO visits to different property owners would have some great benefit if they were to start a legal proceeding with a particular resident, for example, and then there's turnover in a department and people get promoted out. Having the frequently visited locations in there seems like it would be beneficial to the new officers.
Right.
I have a question.
Sure.
You said that people city workers out in the field can send information into you. So does that take a lot of training, like on a little device, or how do they do that?
That is correct. They can do that. It requires, I would say, minimal training. If you're familiar with using a smartphone, it's fairly intuitive. So I have worked with some of our public works staff just in how to use the data, how to use the map in order to convey information.
Was this system in place when we had the fire up north at all?
No, unfortunately not. So that was one of the things that we really, really wanted to address, certainly ahead of this potential fire season, as it's known. So really pleased that that Carl's been able to get some data out of Willamette Valley. So we've got really up-to-date maps, and we're getting that into the hands of Rob and all of his team as well. So
now if we have like a fire emergency, again, a wildfire, they'd be able to track it now where they couldn't, and nobody knew what was going on at the time. Right.
I think there was some data certainly that was available at the time. I think there was some problems in terms of making the data available in a really super timely fashion. I think we're trying to help to alleviate that problem here by providing some more current information.
What if cell phone lines go down again? And I'm using the right terminology. I'm not sure.
Right, yeah. So I think, as Carl pointed out, if there are problems with communication, cell phone towers, phone lines, anything like that, then we do have printed materials as well. So we've got PDF copies of the data as well. So a lot of the information really isn't changing that rapidly for streets, fire hydrants. They're sort of changing very slowly over time. So to create a PDF that's a sort of snapshot in time, this is what it was on this date and time, then that's, Rob has told us that that's going to be good for them for now.
And how long have you been here, Carl?
Let's see, about 4 months.
Okay. Yeah. I think I met you when you first came, and you were in the IT office.
That's right.
Yeah. Welcome. I'm glad you're here.
Thank you.
I think pressure testing and repainting of hydrants, marking those would be an apt use of GIS technology, as well as sidewalk and curb maintenance. That could be in GIS as well on the mobile devices that the streets crew uses. I know some other larger cities with more resources do that, but
absolutely.
It sounds like you're on the ball there. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you.
This is CM. I had a few questions.
Councillor Botteo first, then Hall.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
Okay. I just have a question about the data that you're going to collect. Mm-hmm. Is that data can be used for other community members, like a data baseline, because you know having something like this is very important, but how you gonna prepare to share with other community partners? Because I'm sure if community knows that you have that kind of data, I mean, would you be willing to share, or is it gonna be restricted?
That's sort of on a data set by data set basis, and also which agency we're sharing it with or making it public. So we certainly don't want to put out, you know, inaccurate data to the public. So we want to be careful about that. But often, a lot of the data that we're receiving, we're not exchanging anything for it. We're getting it for free. So we do try to share data when possible, but we want to be responsible about it.
I think it's something that probably, you know, if we proceed, it will come up that, you know, community members will ask for information like that, and I think we need to be prepared how we're going to respond to the public, you know, when they ask for data baseline that we have available.
Sure.
Okay. Councillor Hall.
Sorry, I can't see anyone on the dais, so I'm just going to unmute myself unless you tell me there's a queue. Carl, just a quick question. How did you find out about the Newport job, and did you find housing all right? And I know that kind of how did you find out about the Newport job leads into the next topic.
Yeah, I believe I heard about the Newport job on governmentjobs.com, and I was previously with the city of Wilsonville, so I had a little bit of government training, but Richard was very helpful and kind, and Travis as well, about helping me find housing. And I currently live in Waldport, so I was able to find a place.
Great, welcome.
Okay.
There's an awful lot more surf closer to this location than there is in Wilsonville. Let's just put it like that.
Carl is an avid surfer.
Any other questions?
I heard that David Allen's starting a youth hostel, so that'll open up some opportunities for housing for our younger new employees at his place.
Anything else, Ryan? You got it? Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you both very much.
Thank you.
It's good to know we have this system, and now we have to move on to paving. Okay.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Our next report will be on paving management, and we have Justin Scarborough and David Powell, who will be presenting a report to the City Council on this issue. The one thing, as it's getting set up here, that I think we need to remember as a City Council is that, you know, we had a report done and an analysis done of our street system, and the indication was that we need to be reinvesting about $2 million a year in our street system to keep it at its current status. We did propose the gas tax increase in November of last year. That got defeated by the voters. That would have provided a source of funding to help make up that gap. But we still have a significant gap between the revenues available and the necessary investment that's necessary to keep our streets up and running, and so that's something that we can't really forget about as we are moving forward, because our street systems will continue to get worse and worse unless we have those dollars to reinvest in the street system. So, if you're ready to roll, I'll turn it over to you.
Ready. Good afternoon. So my name is Dave Powell. I'm Public Works Director. Is Justin Scarborough, my superintendent of Public Works. I'm going to give a short presentation. You've got quite a packet of materials there. There's a lot of subject matter. Mm-hmm. I kind of tried to boil it down a little bit in a short PowerPoint to help focus this. I've got about 10 minutes, and then about 10 minutes for questions. Justin's going to help with the questions. I'm going to give the presentation. And so we'll just get started. The material that I'm going to talk about is in your packet. So these are kind of the salient points that we wanted to bring out. Now, the report provides information about pavement management in the city of Newport. The report was initiated after City Council appropriated the $40,000 for that mastic puddle machine during the budgeting process. And this information is for paved roads only and not any of the gravel roads. So some facts that you'll find in your report. The city has 52 miles of paved arterials, collectors, and residential streets. An overview of the condition is that 50% or so are in good or very good condition. Fair condition at 31%. About 15% are in poor condition, and then 3% are in a failed condition. The overall condition continues to deteriorate each year, year over year. In the streets division, we have 5 full-time employees designated. 2 are currently unfilled. So we only have 3 currently filled positions in the streets department, division, rather.
Are those currently out for recruitment?
Yes, they are.
Oh, okay.
So this graph comes from the report, the 2018 report. You can see that our PCI, or the pavement condition index, continues to deteriorate every year. Back in 2018, our average was just a little over 70, and now we're less than 70, about 65%. The 5 FTEs that we have in the streets division do vegetation management, striping. They build and install signage. They repair potholes and do pavement repairs. They do gravel roadway maintenance and install banners and other duties. So these guys are really busy. We've got three right now, and they're, like my dad used to say, like one-arm paper hangers. They're just everywhere doing everything they can to keep the system operational. Some examples of pavement failures up here in the far left upper corner is the pothole. And that's really the only maintenance that we perform in, a repair that we perform in the streets division. The alligatoring, the lateral cracking, the rest of that is outsourced because we simply don't have the manpower to take care of these kind of pavement issues. So road and driveway, we give them a lot of work here in the city and do it in kind of a batch fashion where we identify large areas that need to be corrected and then hire them to come out and do that work.
Is there any competitive bidding for the actual street rebuilds? Is that a different process than just for this type of repair?
We do competitive bidding, but road and driveway is right here local, and they usually get that work. Correct me if I'm wrong, Justin. Yeah. Don't be shy. Jump right on in. So in terms of funding, this comes right out of that 2018 report. Deferred maintenance refers to maintenance that is needed but not performed due to lack of funding. Like Spencer said, $2 million a year is required to maintain the city streets in their current condition, which is fair. That's a PCI of 69 on a scale of 0 to 100. The current funding is only $500,000 a year. And so city streets will continue to deteriorate to poor condition within 20 years of the current funding level. And that's per the 2018 report. So we have some options for the use of the $40,000 that was appropriated. We can do more skin patches, that's outsourcing in high traffic areas to prevent further degradation of the asphalt. An example is Southeast Benton and Southeast 2nd Street, Southwest Canyonway, West Olive and Knight intersections. Those intersections can use an overlay. Purchase the mastic machine for cracks and pothole repairs. We had a demonstration of the mastic machine. The guy brought it out and actually showed us how to use it. We found that it was a great piece of equipment, but it does take a lot of people to run it. And it's expensive, the material's expensive, but it is effective. It, once you've got it in the ground, it lasts 4 to 5 years on those potholes. So the message that I'm trying to convey here is that it'd be great to have another machine, just we don't have the people to run it. That's kind of the bottom line right there. We could hire a third party to do cutouts and patch trouble areas. Use the funds for asphalt sections rated and input into the Street Saver program to help us focus on streets with low PCI. That's also an outsourcing. Or use the funds to start a crack sealing program that would be both in-house and outsourced programs. So with that, that's all I have for the presentation. I know there's a lot more in your packet and it might generate some questions, and that's why Justin and I are both here to answer your questions.
Councillor Kaplan.
You said that it would require more manpower than you have to operate the. How many folks would you need?
Everybody.
Check. Okay. Sorry about that. So for that, the pothole mastic polymer machine, you would need one to drive. You have a chute operator. Then you'd have a guy screeding the material. Uh-huh. And you'd have the fourth person would be also screeding and kind of, you know, you have to have a lookout. So if this is mobile, then that's what you'd have for a mobile.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
So we could draw from other divisions to help with the program when we run the machine. But then again, we're taking away from other division labor.
Councilor Bateo.
I just want to follow up his question. So you have four people only? That's what you said?
Currently
four
we
FTE?
Have... Well, there's five FTE. There's three filled positions currently.
So what is the number for, I mean, just thinking the metrics for 10,000 CD, is it more than five FTE? I think so, right?
I don't know what the metrics are. The other thing, though, too, is the city of 10,000, that's a residential community versus the 10,000 tourism community like Newport. Exactly. You know, there's a lot of differences between those. So the metric for, probably the metric for road miles would be a more meaningful metric than population. But, you know, one of the challenges we have, again, with the financing we have available for roads, and one of the reasons we're seeking more flexibility on the room tax, which is something that has popped up there, is to we really need to invest more into the capital costs. And if we continue increasing staffing, and we added one position in this budget year to the street department, but if we continue increasing staffing, we'll have more people for patching and less money for rebuilding. So it's that balancing act that we have to keep in context, and that's always a challenge. So,
I mean, to contract people, is it hard to contract people? It's kind of hard to find people to work on repairing.
Yeah, it depends on the method. If we're doing like a skin patch, like in the packet. It's as simple as us going out and laying out the area. I believe we laid out 56th and Woods. They were both just skin patches, and that was just us contacting road and driveway, laying out where we needed the work done, and then doing traffic control and letting them go. So that's fairly easy to hire for skin patching and the cutouts. Cutouts is something that might be easier to have, you know, more competition with because there's less cost for the asphalt. But when it comes to the price of the asphalt and the rock, it's just so much easier for road and driveway and cheaper for road and driveway that it's hard to compete as an outside entity.
Oh, thank you. Councillor Hall.
Hey, so I'm not 100% clear on, we did put this in the budget, and are you saying easier for an external source to pave the roads as opposed to us buying the machine, even because it takes four folks to operate the machine? And I'm not clear what I'm hearing on that piece of it. So can you just clarify that? And it doesn't help me to understand what the cost per pallet at $1,910, one pallet fills a 200-gallon tank. But how much roadway does that cover? I don't know that. I don't have enough information on that.
Sure. I believe I did a cost analysis for 24-inch by 24-inch by 3-inch deep for each of the materials that we currently use, which was the coal patch, the asphalt, and then the mastic. So what I did with that is I got a hold of the manufacturer and had them convert how much it would take to fill that hole, and then had him give me the price for the cost of that. So the cost analysis is in here for how much it would cost for that mastic compared to the other materials that we currently use.
And your first, go ahead. You still have a question.
I don't think that's helping answer my question. Are you saying that even though we put it in the budget to buy the machine, that you're saying it would be easier to contract out? I'm not clear
on that. That's part, yeah. You got two questions. So the first question is, yes, you're correct. It would be great to have another piece of equipment to run. Whether we have the manpower to actually run that piece of equipment is the question. Yeah, we would hate to spend the $40,000 to buy a machine and just have it sit because we don't have the time to do that because we're doing all these other activities. You know, the vegetation management, striping, all of the other things with currently three people, when this machine would take a lot of manpower to operate. That's kind of the bottom line on that. So we're looking for your ideas. We've presented some here on what we should do with that $40,000. Should we buy the machine? Should we contract out, prioritize, and use that money as efficiently as possible? to do other activities? That's what we're asking for your direction on.
Councillor Kaplan.
One other question. Assuming you had the machine, I'm assuming that that wouldn't be a full-time every 5 days a week for 52 weeks a year use of it. So best estimate, I guess, in terms of if you had that machine, how frequently would you be using it?
Sure, and that's a good question. You know how everything we do is based on weather, right? We need to, like, we will grade the roads after rain so it works better. You know, we paint when it's dry. We right away mow kind of in the in-between, not too right. wet, not too dry. So this would be another thing that we'd add into that mix. And so whatever needs the most attention at the time is what would be getting the attention. So it'd be hard for me to give a definite how much we would use it. It's just going to be dependent on all those factors.
Yeah, what I'm trying to get at is in other words, it's not that you would need four people on this machine every day, but that there would be theoretically, or in my mind, it would be like a days that you scheduled as mastic day and you'd get a posse.
Right.
And,
correct.
And that would make sense. It would be efficient to, like, have those four people committed for the day and know what the but how many days would it end up being in use? And that's kind of my question.
And that is a question I wouldn't be able to answer right now. I'd have to try to factor it in and think of what days would be available for that machine and then mm-hmm. try to, you know, that's one of the hard things about scheduling is there's so many different aspects of the street. And mm-hmm. so for me to give an answer, I don't feel comfortable of being confident in that number.
Mm-hmm. And with potholes, a lot of times we just, you know, we get a call or a complaint and go out and fill the pothole. I mean, it's a pothole. Or it's two or three potholes. It's not a whole day of potholing.
Right. You can't let them build up until you got enough work to do
exactly.
it.
Exactly, right.
We'll be there as soon as we get our 27th
right.
complaint.
You're only 26. We need 27 more. Yeah.
I guess, is there a hybrid option where you take 30 of that and do line that out to have an outside contractor do the highest priority skin patches and then use that other 10 to lease the machine for 6 months and then, you know, like next summer, that lease it during the dry season so you're not absorbing the full cost of ownership. That might be something to pursue. And then if you did buy it, is there a covered bay that you could put the machine in? That would be really important before you decide to purchase something like that. Around here, if you don't, you know how it is, you don't cover equipment at rust. I'd be in favor of some sort of hybrid, but certainly contracting out as much as of the work during the dry season as you can.
So
clever.
One thing I was kind of curious about is I've seen some success before with like force sharing agreements between county road departments, the state of Oregon, and city public works crews. That's one thing that I guess I kind of had in mind is that I know it's a lot of schedules to line up, but I understand that typically that could be more cost effective in some ways. I think that might be something worthwhile to look into.
Yeah, and I have not contacted Roy Kenyon on this particular issue, but I can certainly follow up with him on that. Might be something we could share.
Yep, and on that note, we have had, we worked with ODOT, I believe, for some of the intersections that were, it's hard to figure out the exact right-of-way in some instances. So on Highway 20, there's an intersection next to U.S. Bank that was one of those. So we just paired up together, and they brought in a grinder, and so we did work in co-op with that. But I think that's a good avenue to look at and see if we can't.
Yeah, I think another issue as well, there's always confusion about, we get complaints about potholes in the state trunk line, either 101 or US 20 into town. And we do not have jurisdiction to deal with those holes that occur there. So there's always some confusion about that as well as far as various jurisdictional issues. And okay. And so, but we do get complaints. We refer them to ODOT, you know, and then ODOT will, you know, deal with them when they can deal with them. So.
If you're going to go into a sharing agreement, I would recommend you just go all out and get the mastic machine, a crack seal toe behind, which is a lot easier to train people on, and a seal coat tank, because Craftco will come and bring the seal coat material to the coast for a fee that's cheaper than using an FDE to drive to Salem where their bulk tank is. We did that in our department. So I think demonstrably all maintenance agencies around here could all benefit from that. It's just the biggest thing, you probably know this already, though, is putting in the MOU, having somebody, a gloved hand, look at that agreement to make sure that the maintenance costs are shared in a way that's clear and isn't like hot potato in case a machine breaks. You know, that's the only downside to those intergovernmental agreements. But I think there's opportunity there to cost share, since y'all's shop is just a block from the other shop, especially.
Yeah, I think what we'll do, and we've got to continue moving on here, because we have
got one question from Councillor Goble, and then we will wrap it up.
But could I suggest what we're going to do here after we hear from Councillor Goble? We'll put a report together to bring to a regular council meeting about the direction that we are recommending for the council to go on this issue based on the conversation that we've had here today.
I was just going to say I'm in favor of getting a machine and training your people on it. We're not doing a very good job with potholes. And I don't know what the ramifications are for getting new people. I don't know whether that is going to get solved in the next year. Or what is the holdup with that? Could you give us an idea on that?
It's just budget and finding people. We've been searching for another streets person for probably 2 months now. Make an offer and then do a background check, and they don't pass the background check. You know, it's a continual process.
There aren't any local people that would be would qualify to do this kind of work. I mean, they're filling potholes and tend to take a lot of.
Start me out at 80. I'll start Monday.
All they have to do is apply and then go through the process.
Yeah, I don't know whether it's the background checks or stuff, whatever is causing you not to hire, or whether it's housing or.
That's part of it.
Okay. Got a comment from Eric.
Spencer advises me we have to move on.
Right. Well,
we have to move on, yeah.
Well, thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
On to employment base. Yep. Barb?
Yeah, Barb, would you come forward? And
thank you.
We wanted to kind of brief the council on several things that have been occurring in the last year on the issue of our efforts to have a more diverse workforce here, and there certainly has been some progress made. And so, Barb, if you want to run through a presentation on your report and kind of hit the highlights on that. So, again, we have to watch our time here today. So,
okay, sure. I'll try to be as brief as possible. Good afternoon, everybody. So I'm going to provide a brief summary on our efforts to recruit a diverse employment base and what we've been doing over the past couple of years. Recruitment-related outreach efforts increased in 2018 with the implementation of NeoGov. That's our online applicant application system and tracking system. As a result, the applicant pools, we did see an increase, dramatic increase, actually, in our applications. Unfortunately, we had the pandemic hit us, and what the great phenomenon of the Great Resignation. Both of these have had a negative impact on the city of Newport over the last 2 years. But despite those challenges with recruitment and staffing, we feel that we've continued to make forward movement with efforts to diversify our employment base. We certainly devalue diversity in all forms, and that I think is reflective in our recruitment and staffing efforts. We take a very broad approach to try to attract as much diversity in our candidate pool as possible. We've also began to implement a lot of changes with our website, our City of Newport website. We've got equal employment opportunity, our how to apply sections, our frequently asked questions, and our benefit sections, all printed both in English and Spanish languages now. We do post our bilingual positions in English and Spanish on governmentjobs.com and other diversity niche sites specifically targeted for a diverse population. Job openings, except our internal postings, which we handle separately, are posted on diversity websites in various local and professional organizations. For example, Central de Ayuda, military.com, diversityjobs.com, latinojobs.com, and various other specialty professional organization websites. Jobs are posted on a national level to reach the most diverse candidate pool. And we continue education internally in implicit and explicit biases with management staff and those participating on interview panels to ensure fairness in the selection process. In June of this year, the city became a member of Partners in Diversity. This is a Portland, Vancouver-based organization that provides education and resources to help employers attract and retain diversity influencers and professionals of color. Included with our membership is access to the careers page of that website, and we've begun to post our jobs on that Partners in Diversity site. We proudly display the diversity and Partners in Diversity logo on our employment page, and we feel that that's going to move us forward even more so in our efforts. We won't be able to evaluate that though for several months, but we're looking forward to that. Some statistics here, just basic for our outreach efforts. Outreach efforts have begun to yield good results with an increase in diversity hires. From our EEO4 report that we completed for the 2020-2021 years, we had a female representation of 29% of our employees. In January 1 to April 1 of this year, that has increased to 31%. With our race and ethnicity statistics, our EEO4 report for 2020 and 2021 reflected a 7% representation. Since January 1, April 1st of 2022, that has increased to 11%. There's also some graphs and charts here that we pulled from the NeoGov, which is our applicant tracking system. There is a bit of a snafu with the category under interviewed, and they're looking into that for us to try to determine where that snafu is. But if you look at the candidates by ethnicity from 2021 compared to 2022, which is just partial year, January to June, you can see that there's a substantial increase. And if you flip over on the next page, same is true for our gender candidates. An increase in females from 2021 to 2022 in the hired category. And then also for current employees, we, you know, because we are a federal contractor, we are required to comply with several of the federal laws regulating equal employment. We are also required to do some data collection as it relates to those mandates. We ask our new hires to voluntarily complete self-identification of race and ethnicity. In 2022, from January to June, you'll see that 80% of the workforce is reflective as white, which is non-Hispanic or Latino, 15% Hispanic or Latino, and then 5% two or more races. We also are mandated to query employees voluntarily for self-identification of disability. We are required to do that every 5 years. We did it initially in years 2016. We just did it again this year in, I believe it was March of 2022. In 2016, we received a larger response than we did this year. We had 61 responses. 15 or 33% of those 61 indicated that they have a disability. This year, in 2022, we received a small response. We only had 21 individuals who responded. 11 or 52% indicated that they have a disability or have previously had a disability. On page 6 of the report, I won't go through that. That's just the local data for the Newport community. It was what I could see from final statistics of year 2019. And then I've put on page 7 the definitions from the EEO for race and ethnicity categories, so you can see how they're broken down if you're not already familiar with that. And then, of course, to support our commitment to diversity and inclusion, the city has developed and complies with a number of policies, and we communicate these policies to all of our new hires, and we do so also annually for all of our employees so that they understand the commitment that the city has regarding those. And I've just attached those for your review as well. So that completes my brief summary. Any questions?
Questions? Councilor Parker?
Did we cross-reference average age of employees? Because I think the attrition is one challenge facing the city, and we can't all be young and sprightly like Eric.
We don't report. We're not required to report on age. Obviously, age is a protected class, so but there isn't any current reporting that we do or statistics that we gather. We could do that manually, just going through our new hire report and our current employee reports. But I don't have that information here with me today.
Councilor Bateo?
Thank you, Barb. This is very good to see, you know, very important. I think, you know, moving forward, it's important to have this data and statistics, you know, to show to the citizens, you know, of Newport to, you know, how we are progressing. I think we are still hearing, you know, that a lot of departments that are having a hard time to hire. And, you know, it's kind of concerning because, you know, I know that there are some people that are looking for jobs, but sometimes they are kind of, you know, thinking about it if they can do that job, because sometimes they haven't practiced or they haven't had the opportunity to volunteer in that job or do like a job shadow. I think it's very important for our community to open those opportunities, especially like, just came day to talk about, you know, the roads. I think having like a job shadows opportunity for the community. I don't know if something, maybe plan in the future to do something like that with our, you know, college students, you know, that maybe they would like to see what it looks like, opening a little bit opportunities. I think it will be good. I'm thinking just, you know, maybe something that we can think more about.
You bet. You know, and that's something Spencer has tasked the department heads with over the last year. We've got a workplace culture initiative that he's kicked off, and we've each been assigned different areas of responsibility to look at. One of those certainly is, you know, recruitment and our efforts to attract a diverse workforce and a skilled and professional workforce, and how we can do that, because over the last 5 to 10 years, that's certainly changed. The landscape has changed dramatically. And for a number of reasons, across the country, organizations are struggling to fill their positions. And it's not just reserved to one profession anymore. You know, law enforcement used to be the one that everyone knew was, you know, difficult to fill. But it's gone way beyond that, and we're even finding difficulties with our part-time positions in our, you know, recreation center and aquatic center. And it's a definite challenge, and it's felt by organizations across the country.
And thank you. And I have my last question. Something that I think is working really well for some of the agencies that are doing locally is to have flyers available. Like they are promoting a position to create flyers so that way they can send it to different, especially, you know, our library is really good at posting, you know, and having, you know, traffic there. If we had a flyer that we are promoting, you know, in, you know, English and Spanish, you know, maybe, you know, the library can promote it, and when people are checking books or, you know, that's, I think it's a, it will be a great opportunity, you know, to use flyers and bring more people to apply.
Yeah, that's a great idea. One struggle would have with that, though, is keeping it updated because our positions, you know, close and open quickly sometimes, but flyers, I think, are still a really good tool. Matter of fact, we're going to be participating in the National Night Out next month and working with the police department to craft a impressive-looking flyer for that very purpose.
Academia uses Twitter to advertise vacancies, especially at PhD programs, and it's wildly successful. Hmm. Another reason why the city needs to be using more social media. I've been saying that for 3 years. We need to start doing it.
Councilor Goble.
So, Barb, thanks for your coming in. I was just looking at your charts here. What's the big difference between last year and this year as far as interviews go? I mean, it seems like people just aren't getting interviewed. Is that what I'm seeing?
Oh, we're doing tons of interviews. The problem is with actually filling the positions. Now, that's not true across the board. We are having some positions where we're having difficulty with people applying, so we've got nobody to interview. But for a number of the positions, we get people that are applying, but they may not be qualified for the position. And as David had mentioned earlier, we interview, we make a contingent job offer, and they're not able to pass the background for various reasons.
I was just looking at the chart and said from last year to this year, it went to 100% of the people interviewed to less than 5% of the people interviewed this year.
Oh, on those charts, the bar that indicates the interviewed, that's the one that's we're having a little bit of trouble with. I don't think that that's an accurate representation. Yeah, and I've got NeoGov, their analytics department, looking into that.
Female side, and last year you were 100% interviewed and down to less than 5% interviewed this year.
Yeah, again, that bar's not accurate. So we're having them look into that.
Yeah, that seems kind of strange that we're getting candidates and then we don't interview them. No?
Yeah, it's not reflective of what's happening.
Any other questions?
Sian here. I do have questions.
Oh, sorry. It's hard for me to see you up there, Sian.
Yep.
Okay, Councilor Hall.
Hi, Sian.
Okay, hi. A couple of questions. One, I was on a National League of Cities webinar in June that was talking about how to attract more, you know, employee talent and such. And they were very clearly being strategic about looking at some of the DEI indexes and metrics. Like if we were to complete some of these metrics, like the Municipal Equality Index for the Human Rights Campaign, where there's a racial and ethnic diversity index. And like a lot of this is about what are our policies internally and us being very forward facing about what we can offer and what Councilor Botea was saying in terms of how we market ourselves. You know, we went to the League of Oregon Cities conference in the spring, and they were talking about what is our hook, what is our paragraph, what does our website say in terms of that. But just in terms of like, what are our 2-3 paragraphs about why they should come to Newport? So maybe we need to have a session where we look at that and pull in that Destination Newport consulting and marketing company to like really like zazz that up. I know we're out of time, but I just wanted to mention, I didn't see it on here, but I'm guessing it's one of the professional organizations, government jobs. Also, locally, MaxList in Portland, or Indeed.com, LinkedIn, and the League of Oregon City site Most folks are shopping us. We're not necessarily in the same position as we used to be, like, where we are, like, come to us. Like, they're looking at us, and what we do not have speaks volumes in terms of, like, on our website and all of the diversity initiatives and aims being more explicit about that. So the more we can put out there, the better for us in terms of recruiting a talented work pool. That's it.
Yeah, absolutely. And just a quick response. I know we're running short on time, but we post all of our jobs on governmentjobs.com. Every job is posted. That's part of NeoGov, and that was part of our package when we purchased it. We do also post some positions on Indeed, ZipRecruiter. We have a large number of specialty sites that we will target. The problem with some of these are they're very, very expensive, and we have got a limited amount of money that has to go a long way for recruitment advertising. The other thing is, you make a great point about kind of jazzing up our website, and Spencer and I have chatted about that, and that's something that we're going to be focusing on this year.
Yeah, we did put an allowance in the budget starting July 1 to deal with that issue based on the discussions at the goal setting session from the council.
Yes, absolutely. I think that's really, that'll serve us well if we do that.
Okay, any other questions before we move on?
Well, thank you all very much.
Thank you, Barb. Okay. On to legislative priorities.
Hey, Barb, just a quick question. Ryan was asking, the street jobs aren't currently on the list. Is that because we're in the interview process for them now?
The utility worker streets, also the utility worker water distribution. We're in final interviews, so okay. Those closed some time ago, and we're hopeful we've got some good candidates.
Okay. The next item is the League of Oregon Cities 2023 legislative priorities ballot, and every other year, the League of Oregon Cities goes through a process where they have various policy committees that work to develop priorities for the upcoming legislative session. The end result of that process is represented in the materials that show 28 legislative priorities that have been identified by the League as possible priorities for this coming year. What they ask each city that's a member of the League of Oregon Cities to do is to prioritize the top five items going forward. We always go through this exercise with the department heads as well. And if you look at the last item on this list under 2E, the department head legislative priorities, those were the priorities that the department heads prioritized this morning. Again, just an informational item for the council's concern. The priority one is actually the last one, which is on the second page there, which was infrastructure financing and resilience. See, but so again, what we have done in the past is had each council member and I think Peggy printed copies of the ballot. If you can take a few minutes and put your five priorities down, we'll compile those. I do have the priorities from Councilor Hall and from Mayor Sawyer here as well, which I've got on our sheet. And again, the background material on each of these policies was included in the report to you as well. If there's any questions or comments before we do that, that's great. But otherwise, if you want to take a few minutes to fill out your ballot, we'll compile them. And then at the regular meeting tonight, we will have the council formally authorize their top five priorities.
I'd like to hear at that time who voted for what.
And we can tell, yeah, it's all public information, so.
And you want to
vote on? Yeah, you got it. I'll fill it out right now. We can.
As a memory jogger.
I'll get it.
Man, you're not that old.
Apparently that doesn't improve.
No, it doesn't.
I feel like from 5 years ago, I'm needs to recruit new city.
Yeah. No, got Eric in training here, so. Oh, okay.
Is Spencer, what is the 23? Okay, you know, road user fee?
Yeah, basically, it's kind of phasing out the gas tax and using a per mile traveled.
Weighted by vehicle type, I think, too. They're having a median on the 26, I'm going to zoom into it.
Okay. But that's kind of eliminating the gas taxes as moving to a miles driven sort of basis.
Talking about the triples full of Wally World.
Oh man, everything's important on here.
Question, what it means digital, what is digital, equity, inclusion?
That's
computer, what, an information?
Or? Yeah, let me take a peek at what exactly that was.
Three laptops?
I wasn't sure what that was.
Yeah.
That was my hope.
No, for me, is they're going to give cell phones, laptops. Yeah.
What number was that?
That was
23. Okay, digital and inclusion. LLC will advocate for legislation and policies that help all individuals and communities have the information technology capacity needed for full participation in our society. And talking about addressing the digital divide between people that have financial and physical access versus those that don't.
We don't rate them. It's just the top five, right?
Yeah, just pick your top five, and we'll compile them all.
Top five. The River House. Together.
And put 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
I called them the other day about it.
You want 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, Spencer?
No, just talk your top, whatever five are your priorities. Okay.
See, you have misinformation.
They put in a bank.
I'll go grab your
food. Center for my travel
planning. Hey,
oh, yeah.
So you are taking your car?
The Nissan place got rid of their fast charger for public use down the street from that hotel. They claim they're giving out too much free power, which I don't believe at all.
Well, it must be true. Are we supposed to go get our?
Yeah, you can grab your meal while I'm tallying these up here, and then I'll give you a report. So. Yep.
I think I've got it under control, maybe.
Really good event on Friday. That was cool.
Yeah, it was kind of fun actually. So.
Susan told me what she really thinks.
Oh, Susan Gomberg. Yeah.
Yep.
You want some Chex Mix, Ben?
Two. Oh, that sounds perfect.
No, I don't think so. Because we get paid for it, but I was gonna donate mine.
Yeah, if the council were making a decision on that, you'd have to do that. Then I think it follows when you do your ethics reporting. Mm-hmm. You have to report any money over. Do you remember what the threshold is?
Over 50.
Gifts or any. Well, then you have to report contracts too that you potentially would have a conflict with. So how much do you make?
$100.
$100. So that may fall. You don't remember what the threshold is for reporting contracts with agencies?
I feel like it might be.
Yeah. So the only thing that you'd have to do is report it on next year's ethics form of what.
Or you can give me the $100.
What?
No, their group is performing at the library in their music series.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So.
But it's the whole group.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the money's not going to one person.
No.
No, but he'll benefit financially. It's the same thing I have to declare for when Angela's doing work for the port, but I can't remember what the threshold is.
It should be 50.
I think it may be a higher threshold for contracts.
I can look tomorrow.
Yeah, but we'll figure that
whatever
out.
Whatever it is, yeah. I don't have a problem reporting it.
Okay.
Didn't want to have somebody accuse me.
Yep. No, it's
utilizing my position.
So, yeah, as long as you didn't, allow you to get the job.
Well, somebody accused me of being in the Nazi party, so I guess they can accuse us of whatever we're in.
Right. Okay.
I guess we're driving that German tank around town.
You got to stop wearing that helmet.
Yeah.
Are we doing fuel pumping?
Yes, we are. And I'm going to give you. I'll give you.
I was thinking, okay.
Now, Beatrice, put those edibles away.
Right. As soon as we get a quorum back, I'll give a brief report, and then we need to vote to go into executive session. So.
How's Gary doing?
Where's dinner from tonight?
He's walking the dog a lot lately.
What did you have?
Tuesday.
He's okay.
He had a little routine, huh?
Uh-huh, yeah. Yeah, he's
quite excited in there.
He's always cleaning up. He's got a bag and a grabber and special people he sees all the time
in
their vans.
Team Town was really the aquarium.
What's up with Dean? Is he sick?
He had an outpatient surgery.
Oh gosh, I'm sorry to hear that.
So he's doing fine.
Hope he's okay.
Yeah, we were wondering.
Got a tattoo on his arm that said "See him rocks."
Ha ha.
Actually, Cynthia, we do have a quorum right now. I can give this report because CM's on and Dietmar's back here.
Mm-hmm. I'm here, yeah.
Our top ranking for priorities from the council. Number one is lodging tax flexibility, which is really good because that's something we're advocating for as a city. So,
yes.
Secondly is property tax reform. There were six that were for lodging tax flexibility, five for property tax reform, And then we had a three-way tie for the last one, which was infrastructure funding to support needed housing, community resiliency and wildfire planning, and investment in community climate planning resources. So those would be the top five priorities from the council.
Go through them again, Spencer, one more time.
So number one was, if you you don't have your ballot in front of you, the lodging tax flexibility.
Okay.
Number two is property tax reform.
Property tax reform, okay.
Yep. And then tied for third place is infrastructure funding to support needed housing.
Okay.
Community resiliency and wildfire planning.
Okay. Well, okay.
And the third one was investment in community climate planning resources.
Mm-hmm.
And then just for your information, number two was, with two votes, was local funding to address homelessness, adequate funding for state climate initiatives, and road user fee vehicle miles traveled. And then with one vote, we had place-based water resources, we had new mobility services, we had cybersecurity and privacy, resilient future broadband infrastructure, digital equity and inclusion, alcohol revenues, marijuana taxes, continued investments in renewable energy, and building decarbonization, address measure 110 shortcomings. So what I'll have for you tonight is the top five that we picked, and then you can talk about that tonight. And make a decision if those are the five you want to submit to the League of Oregon Cities, and we'll get that done tomorrow.
Go ahead, Sam.
Sorry, can you say one more time number five that got voted on?
Number the fifth. Say that again, CM.
I was trying to write him down and I missed number five of the one that.
The last
of the one of the top five. Yeah.
Yeah. So there were three that tied for that, and that was which adds up to our five. One is infrastructure funding to support needed housing. Did you get that?
Yep.
Community resiliency and wildfire planning.
Yep.
And the last one was investment in community climate planning resources.
Oh, got it. Okay. Thank you.
Yep.
How did we coincide with the department heads?
Well, let's take a peek at that.
Yeah, we'll see if we keep the department heads.
GIS guy, he can overload.
Yeah. <He could. laughs> Yeah, right now it's the old-fashioned GIS. So.
Right now, room tax is number one, right?
Yep. So department heads, the number one was infrastructure financing. And resilience was the number one for department heads. Number two was the lodging tax flexibility. So that one corresponds. Number three was the property tax reform. So that corresponds. Number four was local funding to address homelessness. And number five was infrastructure funding to support needed housing. So three of them overlapped with the department heads. Now, if we can have a motion to go into executive session.
May I have a motion to go into executive session?
So moved.
And David always wants you to...
Pursuant to go into executive, pursuant to ORS 192.660, subsection 2, subsection D, to discuss labor negotiations.
Is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor, put down their sandwich and say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Motion carries. Okay. We are now in executive session.
Yeah, now you can adjourn the work session.
I am now going to adjourn the work session and enter executive session.
And it'll take a while. It'll take a minute or two for Peggy to make the transfer here, so.